My rich dad's step 5 of his 7 steps was to seek mentors. I think this is a very important aspect on mentors, and it goes back again, or it ties into Rich Dad's Greatest Secret. I think the biggest problem that people have is they learn to think of good and bad, up and down, or evil and all of the other stuff. Rich Dad says, if you're open to the Great Spirit or learning, you will learn from everybody, good or bad. And what he taught me to see was the strength and weaknesses in everybody. And he says, oftentimes we focus on the strength and we condemn them for the weaknesses. And yet you can learn more from the weaknesses than the strengths. For example, I used to get very frustrated with my poor dad. He had a PhD, very smart man. All of his friends, like I said, that's where I got the 6 friends from. I looked at all his friends and they're all PhDs. And I would hate to say it, but most of them very socialistic. They believed in a communist type of mentality where everything was equal. I don't mean in the bad way. They were more in favor of everything being equal. And I saw all that. And they condemned the capitalists. They said, you look at the robber barons and all this. And I went back to my rich dad, and it was very confusing being 15 to 18 years old at that time. And he says, I want you to see something that most people do not see. He says, your father has very good strengths, and take that. And he also has great weaknesses, and learn from that also. So I never saw anybody at that point on as not being a mentor. In other words, we can learn from everybody around us if we're open to Rich Dad's secret, which is always around us. So when I asked my rich dad, I said, so how come he condemns the capitalists? I said, because your dad cannot see what capitalists really do. For instance, my poor dad went to University of Chicago. And all capitalists know that the University of Chicago was funded by a man named John D. Rockefeller. In other words, the capitalists, because of their vast ability to make so much money, were able to finance the institutions of higher learning. And my poor dad, who still condemned capitalists, and his condemnation filled, clothes or made him myopic, went to Stanford. And Stanford was formed by a man named Leland Stanford. And the same as Duke University, Vanderbilt, and all those other great schools. So oftentimes in this idea of good and bad, we actually blind ourselves. So all people can be mentors to us, and that's really the point I want to make. When it comes to seeking mentors, I've been very fortunate because I've had great mentorship. At the present time, I have a man who has taken over 100 companies public. I've personally never taken one company over the line to go public, and the reason is because I'm still a fundamental investor. I want to make sure that if it goes public, a public company, the shareholders have a very good chance of the company growing. There have been times I wanted to jumpstart something, but I've always held back. And my new mentor, who is about the same age as my dad, has been guiding me in the process of what's called initial public offering or an IPO. And so I've always had great mentors. So when people ask me, how do you find a mentor? Well, number one is you have to do your share. In other words, a mentor is not going to waste time with you. For instance, Tiger Woods would not waste his time giving me golf lessons. And the reason is because, number one, I don't practice. Number two, I'm a lousy golfer. And three, I'm not interested in the game of golf. So why should he teach me? You know what I mean? If I'm not going to do my share. Well, the same thing goes with finding a good accountant and a good attorney. If you don't know the difference between a good one and a bad one, then anyone will do. Many accountants are not that brave. And if you're a brave sort, you want to find a brave accountant. And if you're a real mouse, you'll find a mousy accountant. The other thing I find out is when I ask an accountant, for my real estate company, I ask that accountant, how much real estate do you have? And if they have none, I look for another accountant because I want an accountant who really understands real estate. If I have a small business problem, then I'll ask this person, well, what do you specialize in? They say, I specialize in small businesses. Can you give me some references? Blah, blah, blah. Do you do real estate? No, I don't do real estate. Well, then I have a small business account. And like I said, there are financial planners for the poor, rich, and middle class. This is, there are banks for poor, rich, and middle class. The same thing when it comes to accountants. There are accountants for poor, rich, and middle class. So I go and I see this person, I ask my rich friends who are very wealthy, I said, which accountant or tax strategist do you use? And then I get a reference and I go to them. So the point is when you're ready, the teacher will show up. I think the hardest thing for people to do is to fire an accountant or attorney that you've gotten used to. And that's really silly because you should really change them every 2 years anyway or hire them full time. I mean, that's the way you look. One of the first accountants I ever hired was a guy, and I was wondering why my taxes weren't coming out so well. I went to his office one day, and on his in-basket was like 5,000 files of other clients. And I realized this guy wasn't paying attention to my business. He had his own business to look out for. And so that's the problem with too many, the S quadrant or the small business guys. Because they don't have much money, they have to find an accountant who will work for cheap and work on volume. And so one of the things that behooved me to get rich was so that I could hire the best accountants and get best attorneys. The other good thing about if you understand the financial statement for the employee, they cannot afford to hire the best accountants and best attorneys because they have to pay for the accountants and attorneys with after-tax dollars. As a business owner, because I'm making so much money, my accountants and my attorneys are a pre-tax expense. And the way I've gotten so smart was by having the money, which is a pre-tax dollar. In other words, the government is paying me for the best advice possible. And I hire these guys as an expense, and I get smarter. The reason I know so much is a very simple principle, is be stupid and hire smart people. So what I say to people is that you have to do your share to find a mentor. The reason my current rich dad, my new rich dad, talks to me is because I have built so many companies. I've invested my time understanding tax law, corporate law, venture capitalists, investment bankers, and things like that. So when I sit down with him, he and I share a common vocabulary. As I said, money is just an idea, and if you want to change your life, change your vocabulary. So I've paid my dues. When I first met my current rich dad, see, my poor dad and my rich dad are dead, and they rest in peace. Yet it never stopped me from finding new mentors. So the current mentor I'm with, I have spent my time sitting down with him and learning from him. But I had to pay the dues to be able to talk to him. The first time I called him up and I said, may I come and see you? He said, why? And I said, because I would like to learn from you. He says, nah, don't call me back. I don't want to talk to you. So I called again. Again, rejection is the key. And I kept calling him and I kept calling him. He says, what do you want to know? And I said, I just want information from you. I would like to learn from you. And very suspiciously, he says, well, come on up. And so I drove the 45 minutes to his house. He lives way out on his own. Like I said, he's taken over 100 companies public. I've asked my friends, who's one of the officials in Shearson Lehman, I said, how many guys are there like my new rich dad? He says, in all of his life, he's only met one guy like him. He's one of the most brilliant financial tacticians around. So I called him up. I came out to see him, and I sat down. He says, what do you want? Because he's 80 years old. And I said, I would like to learn from you. And he says, and he didn't believe me. And he said, you don't want a job? I said, no. You don't want to borrow money? I said, no. I just would like the opportunity to learn from you. And he rocked back in his seat and very suspiciously looked at me. He says, how badly do you want to learn? And I said, badly. And this was like on a Tuesday. He says, okay. And I believe it was, he says, on Friday there was a meeting in Lima, Peru, on a gold mine beyond the plane, your expense. And I took this deep gulp. Lima, Peru, says, get your passport, go. How badly do you want to learn? And I drove home and I told my wife, Kim, I said, and we had this big a business meeting to perform. I said, Kim, you got to cover for me. And, you know, being a wife and a business partner and best friend, I said, I'll cover for you. And I was on a plane a few days later, and I was in Lima, Peru, 17,000 feet, inspecting a gold mine. And then I went into a meeting with the bank in Peru to negotiate the purchase of the bank for my new partner. And I sat there with his attorney, his miners, and all of his hands, because he doesn't go anywhere. He sends his team in there. And I'm the new guy on the team. I'm sitting there, and we're evaluating the price of the deal. They wanted $27 million for it. And then by Monday, I was back. It was a very quick trip to Lima, Peru, and I sat down. He says, tell me, should I buy that mine or not? And I gave him a report. I said, I don't think we should buy it. It's at 17,000 feet. The people are indigenous. They've been over there for 50 years. And you look down, and you see graves of their ancestors. and the technological revolution we'd have to bring in, we'd have to fire at least 40% to make the mine viable. And to fire those 40%, we'd have to ask them to move down the mountain because they had to get off the company's property. And the indigenous people tremendously value the graves of their ancestors. And if we downsize 40% of them, they're going to murder every single one of our miners there. So the problem is not a mining problem, it's a socioeconomic problem. And so I recommend we don't buy it. He said, very good. And he says, now you can be my student. So a very important part about finding a mentor is you also need and want to be a good student. There is a lot of truth to that saying that goes, when the student is ready, the teacher will show up. There's another big aspect to finding a mentor. And I think Tony Robbins goes into it, the NLPers go into it, it's called matching and mirroring and all this. Many times a person will come up to me and they'll actually be dressed poor, they look scroungy, they don't look professional. And for somebody like me, that turns me off because it's a mismatch. The same thing happens with vocabulary. The reason you want to learn the words is because if you don't speak the same language, you're not on the same song sheet at that point. So that's a very big part of finding a mentor is really, I think you need to find out who they are, to match them, to be willing to give them more than they're going to give you, as well as match their vocabulary and style of dress. My new business partner, like I said, he is a very, very wealthy man. And so when I talk to him, I dress like a wealthy person because he feels more comfortable with me. If I came in like a scroungy stray dog, I don't know if he would talk to me. The reason I say that is many times I'm asked now if people would, can I be your mentor? But what they never say to me is what they'll do for me. And many times they want me to help them and give them money, so they're not coming in from a strong point of view. I don't need another person who needs to be helped. So part of finding a good mentor is you have to really do your share in being kind of an equal partner in the relationship. There is a give and a take. It's not just a give and you take. So the same thing goes to finding good accountants and good attorneys as I pay the dues. The same thing I recommend buying or purchasing or listening to audio programs of great minds, because that's how you learn. And when I look back upon what was the difference between some of my friends who are still at Xerox and my best friend and I who sold our companies, the difference was we were smart enough to seek great mentors. So the point here is this, given Rich Dad's secrets, you can learn from everybody, and to find a great mentor, you also need to be a great student. You may now be asking yourself, how do I find these mentors or these people I want to learn from? And the answer is always the same, is that you have to do your part. And when you're ready, in my experience, the teacher will always show up. You also have to know what qualities or what you want to learn. For example, until I wanted to learn about an IPO, I actually sat down and said, I've never really taken a company public. I mean, I started back in the early 70s to take one company public because my wallet company was doing so well. But when it went broke, it wouldn't make a very good public offering. So I had to put that one on hold because I still needed to learn how to build a company. But when I was ready, I still remember cranking into my brain cells saying, it's time for me to learn to take a company public. And this is honest to God truth. My next door neighbor came up, says, hey, you want to meet so-and-so? I said, well, who is he? She says, I don't know. I think you'll enjoy talking to him. And that's all it took. And I said, sure, I'll talk to him. And I remember going to this golf course, this country club, and I sat down, and we shook hands, and I said, by the way, I don't know why this meeting is taking place, but what do you do for a living? And he says, I've taken over 100 companies public on Wall Street. What do you do? And at that moment, I knew I met the guy. But until I was ready, and until I was ready to do what it takes, and I was prepared, and until I was looking, the person never showed up. That's been my true experience of it. So the action step for step 5, which is seek mentors, is number 1, I would listen to more and more tapes of some of the wildest thinkers possible. I would listen to them just to stretch my brain. Too many people who follow the thundering herd, they seek out people they agree with them. In other words, you know, the definition in the education system of intelligence is if you agree with me, you're intelligent, and if you don't agree with me, you're an idiot. Well, in my experience, the more people I can find that I don't agree with, the more I'm going to learn from them. So I'll seek out some of the most wildest, craziest ideas possible. Another thing about taking action is I do a lot of volunteer work. Every company I've ever eventually taken over, I started working for free for. I've gone in, I said, I'd like to work for you. I work for free because I want to learn from you. And eventually, I learned so much, I became an invaluable part of the organization. I become a partner. So I work my way into it. It's called sweat equity. And it's really easy to get hired if you don't ask for any money. I mean, I work for free so much of the time, it's ridiculous. So I know that sounds ruthless, but the reality is most small business owners, the reason they get out of their business is because they're working so hard, they die of exhaustion. And they're really happy to turn it over to you. And then once I take it over for not much money, I expand it into the B quadrant. So I have honesty that the part in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, when my rich dad stopped paying me money and I started working for free, is something I have always done. As I said, my partner, who is my new rich dad, who's taken over 100 companies public, I've been working for him for free. And now I'm a full partner in almost every one of the deals he does because I've become invaluable to him. Because not only as a mentor, I'm willing to subordinate my petty indifferences with him or whatever. And I do it his way. I'm a good Marine. I follow orders. And he says, you do it this way, and I do it that way. I don't buck him. And in that process of following the way he does it, not only do I learn how I would do it, I also learn how he would do it. And I become invaluable then to the organization and to the board of directors team. Step number six, a Rich Dad seven steps. Step number six is overcoming the obstacles to wealth. And this may sound redundant, yet what you will find that the obstacles to you becoming wealth are found inside of you and not outside of you. So if you want to become wealthy, don't try and change things outside of you. All you need to do is very simply change inside of you. So these are the six major obstacles to wealth that most people have to overcome. I know because I've had to personally overcome them. And they are. Number one is fear. Like everybody else, I have just as much fear as anybody else. Two, cynicism. There's a part of me that is really cynical and skeptical. Three is laziness. Four are bad habits. And boy, I know about my bad habits and how much they hold me back. Five is arrogance. And six is disappointment. So obstacle number one is fear. And probably the biggest one is the fear of losing money or the fear of making a mistake. The reality is all of us have that fear. The only difference is how we deal with it. For many people, the acronym of fear is false evidence appearing real. Peter Lynch calls it noise. So what prevents most people from moving forward is they actually conjure up. You know, what happens if the stock market crashes? What happens if the market doesn't go the way it does? What happens if I lose money? So what causes people to be prisoners to their fear is, which is emotional, is they really do need to train their technical mind. For example, that's why I say once you know, like in Cashflow 202, you learn how to short a stock or do a put option. In other words, if you're afraid the price is going to fall, all you have to do is train your brain to say, well, I'll just put a put option in it. It cost me $5 or what, $10, whatever it is. Fear gone. And if you're afraid that it might go up, and you don't have enough shares of it, and you don't have money at that time, because I'm broke at that moment, instead of saying, oh, what if it goes up, and you know, da-da-da, all you have to do is put in what's called a call option. Fear's gone again. So many times what causes people to be fearful is a lack of what I call adequate financial education, the education found in the B and the I quadrant of the business owner and investor quadrant. So education has the ability to reduce your fear. And like I said, there'll always be risk, but it doesn't have to be risky. One of the things I joke about in my investment classes is I have a lot of friends from Texas, and my rich dad always said, if you want to be rich, you have to have the Texan's attitude. And my friends from Texas will agree with this. I said, if you're in Texas, you don't want to ever admit you went broke on a duplex. I'll say it again. In Texas, you don't want to say, oh, guess what? I went broke on a duplex. Now, that may sound funny, but today there's people going broke on credit cards. They're not even going broke on a duplex. My friends in Texas say, if you're going to go broke, take the bank with you. And so the thing that they have is a different attitude towards it. They play it big. They play it bold. And if you ask most bankers, I'm not recommending taking the bank with you. But I think even Donald Trump says it. He says, if you owe $2 million, you have a problem. But if you owe $20 million, the bank has the problem. And all too often, people go broke on duplexes rather than going for their dreams. And another way of overcoming fear, again, is education, but going back to the other step, is really have to have mentors. My current mentor has really guided me as to how to process, overcome my fear. And the way he does it is by giving me another way of looking at a problem, seeing the advantage instead of the disadvantage to it. So mentors can play a very big role of overcoming fear. So when you find a mentor, find somebody who's already gone to where you want to go. I say oftentimes to people, most people live in fear because they're getting free advice. And the worst advice you can get is free advice. In other words, I pay for very good advice. And the worst advice is free advice, which comes from your brother-in-law, your sister-in-law, your cheap and tacky accountant, the real estate broker who doesn't know what they're doing. Most people want free advice, but if you want to get rich, you have to have the best advice possible. And you get advice from people who have already gone to where you want to go. For instance, when I was learning how to invest in real estate, I was one of those guys who bought one of those TV infomercials. And they said, come to a free evening for $39 or whatever it is. And I got there, and naturally they upsell you to a workshop for $385. And I went to that workshop. I sat with another friend of mine who was a pilot also. We went through the workshop, and that guy said, man, that was the biggest waste of my money. And it was a waste of time because he never did anything with the information. He was afraid of losing money. But I took that information. I actually went up and talked to the teacher, who was a great instructor. And he said, the most important thing is now that you have this information, you need to find a broker who really understands what you're doing. So the first thing I ran out looking for a nothing down real estate deal, every real estate broker says, you can't do that. They don't have those investments here. And the reason is because a real estate broker is that. They're broke, and they don't have any investment money. That's why they call it brokers. They don't invest in real estate. That's why most stockbrokers don't invest in stocks. They're not really investors. So a big part of overcoming your fear is you better be really careful who's giving you advice. So I went and I knocked on many, many doors looking for the right real estate investor who was also a salesman of real estate, and I found this guy in a dingy little office, and he told me where there were a lot of these little real estate deals for every little money down. And so I invested some time, like 4 weeks, looking for the right broker or the right salesman. That's why I pay my salespeople the best commissions possible, because they can bring me the best deals. All these people looking for, I want no commission selling and all that, that's a very poor person's mentality. I believe in paying my real estate or stock brokers or my financial advisors the most money possible, especially if they make me lots more money. So that's why, again, going back to mentors and fear, is you only find a mirror of yourself out there anyway. As Pogo the Swamp Possum says, I've met the enemy, and it is us. And most poor people find poor advice, and that's why they stay poor. So I found this real estate broker. He says, guess what? I got these apartment houses for sale. They're condominiums, and you can get into them for $2,000 down. I said, where are they? They're in a little city called Lahaina, Maui. And today, Lahaina, Maui is like Aspen, Colorado. I rolled in there. The economy was bad as the early 70s. There was this condominium project that the developer got in trouble with, and you could buy these one-bedroom condominiums for $18,000. So for $1,800 down, I could buy a condominium. Well, naturally, I don't have much money, but I did exactly as the class said. I scrambled around. I found people who would be joint venture partners. We split 50-50. So I did one deal. I bought the thing. I flipped it. I bought it for $18,000. I sold it for $48,000, made $30,000. I gave the guy the $15,000, which is half of the $30,000 profit. I then had my seed money. I reinvested that money in more and more of those projects. And before the thing was over, I had put over $90,000 in my pocket before the rest of the market caught on to it. And that's how I got started. I had no money, but I found good advisors, good team around me. I stuck to my guns. I knew what I was looking for. And that broker has gone on to make a lot of money with me. I pay him well because he has found me the best deals around. So that's part of how you overcome fear and all those other things that stop most investors. And the second obstacle to building wealth is overcoming cynicism. As I said, you are who you hang out with, and cynical people oftentimes hang around with other cynical people. And so when I started saying to my friends, well, this was in the 70s, that I was going to find these nothing down deals, they all said, dream on, you can't do it. As I said, the Marine Corps friend of mine who took the real estate course with me, he wanted his money back from the course, he says, because it was a bunch of bunk. And as my stockbroker friend from Toronto says, cynics never win, because they ultimately emotionally shoot themselves in the foot anyway. So I think I've covered a lot of the cynicism out there. I really do my best to keep an open mind. When somebody says they're making, you know, just the other day I met a guy who says, I just raised $129 million on the stock market. And one of my partners said, the guy is a liar, doesn't know what he's talking about. I, you know, cynicism. I keep my mind open. I put a phone call in the guy. I've asked him to have another luncheon with him. Because if this, he's only 30 years old. If it is true, I want to find out from this guy. I don't want to discount him right now. I don't want to write him off the book. I'll invest one or two more lunches with the young man to find out what he knows. And even if it's not exactly accurate, I might find out some more wild and crazy ideas that he's actually doing. So what I found the contrary, the opposite side of cynicism, is an open mind. And as this bumper sticker says, your mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. And obstacle number three is laziness. What I mean by that kind of laziness is smart laziness. In other words, I have other people working for me or I have money working for me, and that's financial laziness. But there's other people who are actually lazy by being busy. In other words, they stay very, very busy. That's why it's called a busyness. It's not a business. They're just staying busy so they don't have to do the next step in their lives. And that's so there's a lot of hardworking people who are actually lazy because they're not willing to make the next paradigm shift. They're not willing to go on to the next level. It's oftentimes easier to continue doing the same thing and staying busy and looking busy and collecting the paycheck rather than stopping and say, is this getting me to where I want to go? One of the things I had to do back in 1994 was stop teaching seminars. Today people say, how many seminars are you doing? I said, I'm not doing any. And the reason for that, as long as I kept doing seminars, I was actually working hard but being less effective. So instead of continuing to teach business or entrepreneurship and investing, I created what I call the seminar in the box, which is cash flow. So by putting it into a box and reducing the price from $10,000 to teach people what I knew, I could now do it for a fraction of the cost by putting it in a box. The other part about laziness is many people have what I call lazy ideas, and that's where the idea of I can't afford it comes from. That is a very important point. Most poor people, it is very easy to say I can't afford it, because if you say I can't afford it, then your mind stops working and you don't have to do anything. At that point, you can shut down your entire life. And so by saying I can't afford it, you actually promote a lazy person's point of view. When my rich dad instructed both his son Mike and me to say, how can I afford it? It really forced us to get to work and to think. I believe it was Henry Ford who said, thinking is the hardest work there is. That's why so few people engage in it. And that's what I mean by laziness. For many people, it's very easy to say, I can't afford it, or I can't do it, or it's not going to work, or it's too risky, or just stay busy in their business, like spending the time on the treadmill or in the rat race, not going anywhere. And those are all forms of laziness. They're physical laziness as well as mental laziness.
This is the end of Side 10. Side 9 is already queued up for your next listening.